Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate
Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Vivikta Upasangamya.
Vridita
Kritahelana. Pasparsha Padayo Enam. Kritanaka Varchasa. Vivikta Upasangamya. Vridita Kritahelana. Pasparsha Padayo Enam. Kiritenarka Varchasa. Vivikta Upasangamya. Vridita Kritahelana. Pasparsha Padayo Enam. Kritinaka Vachasa. Vivikte. In a solitary place.
In a solitary place.
Upasangamya.
Upasangamya.
Approaching.
Approaching.
Vikridita. Vriditaha.
Vriditaha.
Ashamed.
Amen.
Kritahelana.
Kritahelana.
Having committed offense.
Having committed offense.
Who is being spoken about here? Who is doing this? Yes, Indra. Lord Indra. Who remembers something from yesterday's class? Was that?
Goloka mentioned in the verse was a material planet, the cow.
Yes. Yes.
Sarabi came with
him. Yeah? What?
Sarabi came with
him. Who is Sarabi?
Mother of the cows.
Cow. A cow. An exalted cow. Yes.
Also, Sarabi mentioned, we don't want Indra anymore as our controller.
We want you.
Krishna.
Yes. Anything else? Any other? What does he remember? Anything from yesterday's class? Yes. Yeah. Why? Yes. Because after Brahma's prayers, Krishna just looked at him. And Brahma offered so many prayers, very, very powerful prayers. Krishna just looked at him and he didn't even reply, as if to say, why are you speaking such words glorifying me? I'm just a coward boy in the forest of Vrindavan. And he didn't say anything. And if you offer your respects to someone and apologize to someone and they don't say anything in response, I'm very sorry I did this and this and this, and there is no response, then what? In your own mind?
You get shut out.
You get what?
Shut out.
Shut out?
Yeah.
What does that mean?
Humble,
yeah. But what is your mind like? If I do something that really upsets you, and I say I'm really, really sorry, and you just look at me, and not say anything. Now, what's going to happen in your mind?
You're not forgiving.
You have no idea whether the person's actually forgiving you or not, right? Yes, that's what you. Yeah. So Brahma didn't like that. But actually, of course, Krishna had forgiven him. But he gave some sagacious words of advice to Indra. You bring Sarabhi with you. Why? Why did he suggest you bring Sarabhi cow? Yes.
Dear to Krishna.
Yes, because... And what happens, say if I do something really wrong, and then I bring someone with me who you really love, then what happens? Then when you're with someone that you really love, is your hard heart hard or soft? Soft. So if your heart is soft already, then you'll naturally and easily forgive the other person. So very, very this is called Rajniti. What does Rajniti mean? It means diplomacy, the proper way to act. This is very, very typical in India. Say if someone has some land, or if you want a favor from someone, you don't approach the person directly. The first person you approach is his mother. And you say, oh, we need this, and the mother is very soft and gentle. We plead this, you please ask your son if you would do that. And then the mother go ask the son, and how could he say no to his mother if his mother's requesting it? This is the the indirect way of dealings. So Indra felt very, very, very bad. Vivikti, what does that mean? Does anyone remember? In a solitary place. Pasamgamya, approach, vridita, ashamed. So he approached Krishna in a solitary place and he was ashamed. Why? Krita Helena. Because of having committed an offense. What does Krita Helena mean? It's so hard, isn't it? Okay. Having committed an offense, he was ashamed. Vridita. He was ashamed because he had done something so horrible. How do you say, I'm sorry, please forgive me, to someone who you tried to, just a few days before, you tried to kill every single person that they love. And now he's going to have to say, and then when you find out how powerful that person is. So, paspara, pasparsha. We know the word sparsha. What does sparsha mean? Touch. So, same word. So he touched padayor upon his feet, enam, him, kiritena, with his helmet. In other words, his helmet, Indra's helmet. And what is his helmet? Arka. What does arka mean? Does anyone? Do you know? Did you ever make a t-shirt of the sun?
No.
A big effulgent sun? Well, that's what arka means. Puran arka dunoditaha. That Krishna means the sun arises and darkness goes away. So Indra's helmet, varchasa, the effulgence of which arka, was like the sun. And Kiritena, with that helmet, he placed it upon Krishna's lotus feet, asking him for forgiveness because he was so ashamed about what he had done, and he was also fearful. So, translation. Indra was very ashamed of having offended the Lord. He tried to kill Krishna and everyone else in Vrindavan. Approaching him in a solitary place, Indra fell down and lay his helmet, whose effulgence was as brilliant as the sun, upon the Lord's lotus feet. Please repeat. Indra was very ashamed Of having offended the Lord.
Offended the Lord.
Approaching Him in a solitary place. Indra fell down and lay his helmet, whose effulgence was as brilliant as the sun, upon the Lord's lotus feet. Now, this is the English translation. It could mean, right, that he took his helmet off and he laid it at Krishna's lotus feet. Couldn't it mean that? Yes? But does it mean that? What do you think? Do you think Krishna took his helmet off and put it at... Indra took his helmet off and put it at Krishna's feet? There was something attached to the inside of his helmet. And that happened to be his head. Because that is considered a very humble position. When you place your head at someone's feet, it means I'm surrendering to you. And for Indra, the king of heaven, who is so powerful, incredibly powerful, we cannot estimate how powerful he is. For him to do this, to show that I am submitting myself to you, this shows his feeling very, very shy and ashamed, because before he was feeling extremely proud. What was his pride? And for Indra, the king of heaven, who is so powerful, incredibly powerful, we cannot estimate how powerful he is. For him to do this, to show that I am submitting myself to you. This shows his feeling very, very shy and ashamed, because before he was feeling extremely proud. What was his pride exhibited as? There was a chapter on this. What happened earlier? And Indra showed his pride. What? How did Indra show his pride?
By sending something else.
Okay, but what was before that? What was the exhibition of his pride? What caused Indra's pride to become manifest? Because we could walk along all day long, and everyone thinks no one knows if we're proud or humble. But if someone gets poked a little bit, how dare you do this to me, then the pride, the false pride, comes out. So what was the event that caused, that showed, made Indra exhibit his pride? Yeah, Krishna told Nanda Maharaja, don't worship Indra. And Indra, what? This boy? Of course, he had forgotten. But Krishna was unlimitedly powerful. This boy has stopped my sacrifice, and they are listening to him, this little boy, and thereby offending me. I will show them if they've done right or wrong. I will show him who I am, who I am. That's our pride. How dare you do this to me, because I am Indra, I am so powerful, I rule the heavens, and you are daring stop my sacrifice. I will teach you a lesson. So this is the exhibition of pride. So Krishna specifically did this. He wanted to poke Indra to make his pride come out, because Indra was his devotee. And it is very unsuitable for a devotee to be proud. Why? Why is being proud and being a devotee unsuitable? Or we could say it's not possible to be a devotee and be proud. Why? There's not only one answer to this, perhaps, so ask. Yes?
The devotee is to be very, very humble.
Well, yes, that's true. But why? Why doesn't it work? Why can't a devotee be proud? Or rather, falsely proud, yes. Why does one get proud? What makes one proud? Yeah, I think that I'm. When we think of ourselves anything as anything other than insignificant, an insignificant service of Krishna, it is false pride. And why is that false pride? Why is it counterproductive to devotion? Why does it work opposite to devotion? Why can't a devotee actually be proud? Why? Excuse me? And what's the knowledge that he has? Yes. And but what is it specifically in pride that gets in the way of our being a servant of the Lord? Yeah. Yeah. Because the doorway into devotion is dependence. And a devotee actually at every moment feels himself dependent on Krishna, which is exactly the opposite of material consciousness. If you're dependent, does that mean you're in control? What do you think? If you are dependent, are you in control of everything? It's just the opposite. No one in this world wants to be dependent on another, because it's very dangerous to be dependent on someone in this world, because you never know what they're going to do to you. And as Kali Yuga goes on, people are feeling more and more that it's dangerous to be dependent on another. I better take care of myself. And unfortunately, no one is capable of taking care of themselves, especially if they don't know who their self is. But just, and what happens when there's no trust of anyone, and everyone is frightened of being dependent upon another, then how lonely one is. That one has no intimate relationships, because relationship means that you give and take, and you're dependent. You become dependent on others. So the people in Kali Yuga are more and more fearful of relationships, and as they become more justified in saying, oh, I'm take care of myself, no one's going to take care of me, my parents have let me down, my grandparents have let me down, the government leaves me down, my partner has left me down, my next partner left me down, and then my next partner's next partner left me down. So everyone, so therefore, me. Everyone just only thinks about themselves, and the result of that is the deepest loneliness. So, when one depends upon the person who is actually dependable, which is Krishna, then one can be a devotee. Gotrapte varanam tata sarvadamam pratyaja mamekam sharanam vraja. So Indra's false pride was removed. So was that, he was thinking, this is the most terrible thing that's happened, that they've stopped the sacrifice. I'll teach them. And he sent forth very heavy clouds with torrents of rain. And then Krishna, what did Krishna do in response? He lifted, how did he lift him, the hill? How? Yes, exactly. The little finger of his left hand. If you wanted to lift, we can't even lift a book, practically speaking, with the little finger of our left hand. We can only lift like a feather or a pencil or something on that level. But something that has weight to it, We can't lift in that way. We have to struggle so much. So when Krishna lifts a hill, an entire a mountain actually, with a little finger of his left hand, what do we understand from that? Yes? Very easy. For him, it's completely insignificant. So, if someone has so much strength that to lift a mountain is insignificant for him, he can do it with a little finger of his left hand, and that's just a small part of his strength. Because he was holding it with his left hand and he wasn't even concerned about it. A mountain. So therefore, a person with that kind of strength is the kind of person that we can take shelter of and feel very secure. So Indra's false pride was removed and he became very, very humble. It was removed by Krishna's mercy. So in this life, in our lives, is there ever a time when something happens to us that we really didn't want to happen? Did that ever happen to you? One time? More than twice even, yes? And sometimes do we get angry when that happens? Something like Indra? So is that a product of our great humility? You know that Prabhupada once said that if there is an argument amongst devotees, it is both devotees' fault. Because one devotee approached Prabhupada. What's Sava Bhavana Prabhu's wife's name? Sava's, she's also a Sava. She approached Prabhupada. What? Yeah, Subangi. Yes? So she approached Prabhupada and she said, Prabhupada, the devotees are always fighting, always arguing with each other and fighting. And Prabhupada said, that is, it means that both are at fault. Why? How can both be at fault when I'm always right? The other person's fault always. Because Prabhupada explained, it takes two to fight, to have an argument. Like if I really get heavy and criticize you and you say you're right, it's 100% true, then there's no more argument. When there's no defense, there's no argument. So it means that Prabhupada said, that means that it's both the fault, because both of them were not humble enough to avoid the argument. Because if one, all it takes is one person to want to avoid the argument, and then there's no argument. And of course I'm thinking the one person should be the other person, of course. But that's not the proper way to think naturally. So therefore amongst Vaishnavas this is Trinada Pisani Chena Toroda Pisa Hisanara Manina Maradena Kirtanya Sadari. This verse is very important. Do you know the meaning of that verse? Do you know it? No. Do you know? Who knows the meaning of that verse? Trinada Pisa. Do we say that every day? Sundays? In Perth they say it. Huh? On the weekends. What is the meaning of that verse? Not exactly. Not one should chant the holy name. But if one has a humble state of mind and is very tolerant, then one will be able to chant the holy name constantly. Otherwise we cannot. Because it's required to have a humble state of mind. Because when you're feeling proud, who do you need? When you have your money and your strength and your intelligence, who do you need to survive? No one. But if you're feeling very insignificant and weak and vulnerable, you're always needy. So therefore, when one feels, and then when one feels very needy, then one can be dependent. And if one feels dependent on Krishna continuously, if one needs Krishna's protection at every single moment, then one that depth of humility is required to constantly be in the association of Krishna by chanting his holy names. That's what's required. And Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said that it is impossible to continuously chant the holy names if one is infected by the lower modes of material nature, passion and ignorance. Because you need complete dependence on Krishna to continuously chant the holy name. And ignorance means, because that's reality. Goodness gives us knowledge. Sattvam sanjayate jnanam. And ignorance covers our knowledge. So if we don't have the knowledge how insignificant we actually are, that is due to the mode of ignorance. And passion fills us with so many desires that we don't care about how insignificant we are. We want to do it immediately. Feverish passion. So passion and ignorance disallow us from feeling dependent, and they disallow us therefore from continuously chanting Krishna's names. So therefore, a devotee, this is not a very difficult question that I'll ask, what mode of material nature does a devotee want to keep himself in? Goodness. That's not a mode of material nature, pure goodness, but goodness. And why? Because it's very, because we lose our ability to depend on Krishna. And we're filled when we're passionate. We have so many desires, we have to run and run and run and run. And as soon as we start to chant our rounds, what happens? The mind says, so nice, I can now take a tour of the whole universe. And then after doing that for a while, because the universe is so big, the mind gets very tired. And then you can go to sleep when you're chanting your rounds. So passion leads to ignorance. In this way. So the devotee wants to keep himself in the mode of goodness. Now take a moment and think if there's anything that you do in your life that fills you with passion. Means desires, material desires. Think if there's anything that fills you with materialistic desires, and think if you really want that thing, find something that you might be able to actually change and stop doing, because it's counterproductive, because it puts you in passion, and passion results in ignorance. Ignorance means lust, anger and greed, which come, Rajagunam Samudbhava, which come from passion. See if there's any passion-giving force that you can take a vow at this very moment to throw out the window, even if it's your television. But be careful, there's no one directly below you when you throw it out the window. So Indra had his false pride removed, and he understood what made him understand his insignificance. Krishna's greatness. Specifically, he used all his power to try to kill the residents of Vrindavan. He used all his power based on his anger. And Krishna, just with the little finger of his left hand, which implies he has much more power than he was showing at that very moment, he lifted Govanand Hill. And he had his pastimes there. So he had the most wonderful pastimes beneath Govanand Hill. And everyone in the Vrindavan had the opportunity to look at Krishna, because especially the young ladies of Vrindavan, they couldn't look at Krishna generally, because everyone would say, "Oh, you shouldn't be looking at a young boy. You're a married girl, or this or that." But under the hill, everyone for 8 days just simply stared at Krishna and how beautiful he was. And they were not afflicted by hunger and thirst, because they were Vrishvasis. They loved Krishna so much that this was the perfection. This is all that they could think of all the time. When Krishna was out herding the cows, they were just thinking, "When can I see Krishna again? When can I see Krishna again?" So on this occasion, they had an opportunity to see Krishna, and they were so happy seeing Krishna. Why? Akshanvantam param. I can't remember the rest of the verse. Why were they so happy just looking at Krishna? Don't call out. Why were they so happy? For 8 days they just looked at Krishna. Just look at Krishna. Why were they so happy? Just looking at Krishna for 8 days. There's two things. One thing that Krishna had, not one thing, but we can express it as one thing, and one thing that they had. Yes?
Krishna is beautiful.
Krishna is so beautiful. So being really, really stretched out. Extremely beautiful. So extremely beautiful. He's an ocean of beauty. Not only beautiful, so beautiful. An unlimited ocean of beauty. Can you just imagine what unlimited beauty is? And what's the thing on the other side? Krishna is unlimited beautiful. They're beautiful on the other... Yeah? Yeah. They love Krishna. They love Krishna. What it means... Now, if Krishna is unlimited beautiful, does a tiny soul have the ability to appreciate unlimited beauty? This point being that Krishna has more beauty than anyone can assimilate. Isn't that an interesting concept? And then according to how much we love Krishna, or according to Krishna's desire ultimately, he reveals to us aspects of his unlimited beauty, but there is no limit to that beauty. Even if one stared at Krishna not for 8 days, but for 800,000 million days, and if one had love for Krishna, and if Krishna wanted to reveal different aspects of his beauty, he could do so. And it still wouldn't reach the end of his beauty. Because our capacity is small compared to Krishna's unlimited beauty. It's like saying how many thimbles of water, because we're like thimbles, a thimble. Do they still have thimbles in this world? Yeah? Do you use a thimble when you string garlands? Huh? And so if you, how many thimblefuls of water can the ocean fill? So many, extremely many. We could even say unlimited many. So we tiny souls are like thimbles. We can hold a thimbleful of beauty. And Krishna has an ocean of beauty. And therefore he is all attractive. His ability to express beauty is so far beyond our capacity to appreciate beauty that he can just show different one aspect after the next, 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 after the next. It will never get boring. If we have love for Krishna, he will show. That causes Krishna to reveal his opulences. Because if someone, and it's common, you know, like everyone has a certain amount of money, say, but does anyone ever tell how much money they have? That's the thing that people tell least. No one will ever tell except their closest and dearest how much money they have. Why? Why don't people tell just anyone how much money they have? Huh? Yes, but because what's before taking it away, you have to feel that you want it. Yes? And before you feel you want it, you have to feel envious. You have to feel, his person has something that I want. That means you have to feel first envy of the person. So we don't reveal how much money we have to other people unless we trust them completely. And someone who we trust completely is someone who we trust is not envious of us. And we don't reveal it to people, ordinary people, because everyone is generally envious of everyone else. Because everyone is feeling unsatisfied, and everyone thinks they don't have enough, and everyone feels, this one has something that I don't have and that I want, and if I have that, I'll be so much happier, and even better than that, he'll be miserable when I take it from him. That's envy. So Krishna doesn't reveal his beauty to us unless we are free from envy. He doesn't reveal his opulences unless we are free from envy. Unless we acknowledge that we are tiny and insignificant and he is our Lord and Master. And there is no envy in our heart. Then he will reveal, we're trustworthy and he can reveal everything to us about the spiritual world, about his nature. But envy has to be removed from the heart. So it's very important that we clean our hearts if we wish to advance in spiritual life. And enviousness has to be removed. Weaknesses of heart, vidya dolabam. One of them is this enviousness, matsarya. Here's the purport. The specific solitary place when Indra approached Sri Krishna is mentioned by the sage Sri Vaishampayan in the Hari Vamsa, the Vishnu Purva 19.3, as Sadarsho Pavishtam Vai Govardhana Shila Tale. Indra, or he saw him, Krishna, sitting at the base of Govardhan Hill, all alone. Raise your hand if you've ever seen Govardhan Hill. Almost everyone. Raise your hand if you've ever seen a piece of Govardhan Hill. Have you? Yes, you have. Is there a piece of Govardhan Hill, a Govardhan Shila, Govardhan Rock on the altar? Have you seen it? Yes. So you're so lucky. You've seen Giriraj. Giriraj is not different from Krishna. So Krishna, the Hari Vamsa explains that Krishna was sitting at the base of Govardhan Hill. What was he doing? Does anyone know what Krishna was doing? Yes? How do you know that? That's what Krishna was doing at the base of Govardhan Hill. He was inspecting because he loves Giriraj Govardhan. And Indra had thrown so many thunderbolts, so he was going around inspecting to see, assessing the damage to see if the if Giriraj Govardhan was hurt. But actually, was Giriraj Govardhan hurt? No, because he did not feel any pain. Why? Because he had been touched by the lotus hand of Krishna continuously for 8 days. Just being touched by Krishna, he was in so much ecstasy. And Krishna was also doing this, as the purport continues. He was providing. So when Krishna does something, he fulfills many, many, many purposes when he does one thing. So he was providing also a place, a lonely place, so that Indra could apologize to him. So the last two sentences. From the commentaries of the Acharyas, we understand that Lord Krishna wanted to provide a solitary meeting for Indra so that he would not be further humiliated. Indra came to surrender and beg forgiveness, and the Lord allowed him to do so privately. So Krishna was just sitting by Govardhan Hill. And what is the name of the place? The specific area of Govardhan Hill where he was sitting? Govindakund. Raise your hand if you've been to Govindakund. Yeah. So nice there. If all the people who are asking you for money leave you alone. Oh, they drive you crazy. It is so nice at Govindakund. You should go and see. If you haven't, if you've already been to Govindakund, you should go again. And if you haven't been, you should go. It's so nice. And when you're at Govindakund, there are cows everywhere. Well, I should have brought some pictures of Govindakund. And there are cows everywhere, and the earth is very soft. The earth is very soft, and you can just bow down, and you can put your hands, just touch Giriraj, and you can put your head, because it's very close to the Govardhan, and you can put your head there and pray and pray and pray. Oh, when will I leave my pride so far behind? When will I lose my envy? I have a mountain of envy and a mountain of pride. And I'm so attached to my pride and my envy. And therefore, when the material nature arranges a circumstance that removes my pride or offers me some humiliation, I feel so upset. Oh, please make me humble, oh dear Giriraj. Krishna was just sitting there. And what was Krishna wearing? What does Krishna always wear?
Yellow.
He was wearing a yellow what? A yellow what? Dhoti. And what is it compared to? As brilliant as lightning. Have you ever seen? There's lightning in Melbourne, yes, all the time. It's flashing and it's effulgent and brilliantly yellow. And what else was Krishna? Does Krishna wear? Peacock feather upon his head. And he was there. And in his belt, what did he have? His mobile phone? His flute tucked in his belt? Yeah? The buffalo horn? Yes. And what else does Krishna have? A rope? Yeah. He carries a rope. And what's the rope used for? tying up the legs of the calves or cows. Sometimes Krishna would take the rope and put it on the top of his turban and make a decoration out of it. So he's the coolest of all teenagers, except he wasn't a teenager yet. He was below that. So beautiful, so handsome, very soft skin. His hands, feet are pinkish in color, so soft, tender. Very innocent young boy, very beautiful, unlimitedly beautiful. And he stood there, and Indra came and offered his obeisances. Okay, thank you. Any questions or comments?
Yes. Very beautiful smile.
Excuse me?
Very beautiful smile on his face.
Yes. Very beautiful smile on his face. Very beautiful smile. Yes, very alluring, captivating smile. One time, the first time I walked around Govardhan Hill many years ago, now I can't do it anymore. But the first time I walked around with one devotee named Buddhara and then Ayodhyapati Prabhu, who's now His Holiness Bhakti Brinda Govinda Maharaj. He had walked around before, and he took us around. And when we got to Govindakund, it was the day there was a celebration going on, and it was the day, because it was the day where Indra had offered his prayers in Sarabhi on that day, 8 days after the beginning of Govardhan Puja. And it was the day that Sarabhi had bathed Indra. So they had a big feast at one of the temples that were being offered to Krishna on that day. So it's so amazing, just walk around and you get somewhere, this is Vrindavan, and then the people come over and pull you over and they sit down and take a big feast. And because we had been walking and walking since early, we hadn't eaten, we were so hungry. Giriraj was so kind to give us a feast on that day. Vrindavan is a magic land. It's alive. Here, every other place is the material world. It's quite dead. And we're trying to get pleasure from something dead. You can't get pleasure from something dead. There's no life. But the spiritual world is all life. Everything is alive. It is called Chintamani Dham. Everything is alive. That is where we belong. And then we will come alive. Any questions or comments? Yes, we
will.
That's what Prabhupada said.
Myself sometimes trying to get and asking something might not be done properly, and then ask somebody to do it nicely, and then you know, you see that argument's going to rise, and sometimes like, no, no.
I'm sorry, I don't.
Sometimes I'll think, I don't want the same thing because an argument's going to be inevitable, and then, but then I think, well, if I don't say anything, then I'll be.
Yeah. Be very affectionate when you instruct someone and appreciative of what they have done. Because it's easy to see, because there's so much stress and it's so difficult to manage in Kali Yuga. And especially in temples, it's difficult to manage. If you have a business or something, you're paying someone a salary to do something, there's a lot less arguments. because if they don't want to do it, get out. They have to. Everyone's on their best behavior in that way. But when people's sincerity and is so mixed in with their offering, what they're doing, because it's mostly voluntary, like that. So it's very, very difficult, and people tend to get defensive because they're trying their best and they're giving something, and there's so much stress on everyone, because there's so much to be done all the time. So it's always a little bit tense, and it's difficult to manage in that way. So it's best to get one's consciousness first before one do it. One get in the as good as consciousness as one can, appreciative, and then you have to do your duty. Because you're a servant, so you get an appreciative consciousness of the other, see what they're doing, because it's so rare that anyone is aspiring to be a devotee in this world, and then you get your consciousness that right, that this is my service to please my Guru Maharaj, to please Srila Prabhupada, to please Radha Balava, to please the Vaishnavas. I have to do this, so it's not. We don't come out from a position of pride. So this is ideal if we can do this. It's difficult. And then something may happen anyway, unfavorable. You've tried your best. Yeah, we should try as much as possible to make the dealings between the devotees gentle as we possibly can. Because the people who you love and that you're the closest to can give you the most pain, the most difficult. So we should be very... And there's a saying that about harsh words. If an arrow, harsh words go in the heart, and it's very difficult. They can be in there for years and years and years and years and years and years and years. And I've had the experience, with 20 years later, right? So when I was teaching, I said something to a boy, and then 20 years later he said, "You remember the time?" And I couldn't remember it in the slightest bit. I couldn't remember it at all, but he remembered it very well. So that happens very, very often. You say something and you completely forget it, but the sharp word has entered the heart of another, and they don't forget it. So we should try to be careful. And we should do our part, and so the people in management should try to be careful and get their consciousness right, appreciative and whenever. And the people who are being managed, they should try to be very, very cooperative. So everyone should know what their own duty is in that, and not say, "Well, you're not being cooperative. Well, that's because you're not appreciating me." Everyone should try to keep their mind on their own duty, like that. And also, one thing that I found, which is just a simple practical suggestion, is when someone is doing something wrong, unless it's an emergency or it's going to cause them harm or it's going to really get in the way, that's not the best time to correct them, because they're into it and they're really attached to doing it in that way. But later on, when things are a little cooler, that's often a better time to offer some corrective advice. Does that answer any other questions or comments? In the early days of the movement, if someone was, had joined like 2 weeks before someone else, or the month before, or 2 months, or 6 months, then we think, "Oh yes, I'm senior to this person," and therefore. Everyone was more or less the same. So we should should be gentle as much as we possibly can. We want to make the association of the devotees so sweet and attractive. And the basic principles, we should keep in the mood of being a servant. And who we are a servant of, even if we're the boss, we're servants. And you know, that's clear when you're in the position of boss. It's clear to you anyway that you have to end up serving everyone. You're not a boss at all. You're not in charge. You have to serve everyone. So everyone should appreciate also it's so hard to manage in Kali Yuga, especially a temple, especially a volunteer organization. It's so difficult to manage, so people should be as cooperative as they can. And the management should be as gentle. And that way everyone's trying their best. It's so hard to stay a devotee in Kali Yuga because Maya is so powerful. It's always pulling. And it's so alluring. You know, we have habits from this life and previous lives that we're sensitive to. You know, Maya's attachments. Maya presents certain things to us according to our weakness to test us, to see what we really want. Do we really want to be in Vrindavan? Do we have some envy of Krishna's position as the enjoyer? So Maya is very alluring, and everyone's mind is in Kali Yuga so disturbed. It's by nature, by just being born here. So we should be tolerant and have the association of devotees so sweet. You know, that's ideal. That it's attractive and it's a true shelter. Any other? Thank you. Good question. Any other questions? Yeah. Because, like if I accused you of wearing a red sari or something like that, that wouldn't bother you at all. Because why? Because your sari is blue. This doesn't have anything to do with me. But the things that pierce us are the true things. Usually, there's truth to it, but the intent. We don't trust the intent so much. Something like that. So sometimes there's truth in there. And we don't want to acknowledge it. You know, there may be circumstances around it. Anyway, it's a healthy way to look at it. But you also have to be practical, though, you know. There's that the famous story that Prabhupada told of Narada and the cobra. Narada made a snake a devotee. So therefore the snake was moving around, and all the kids saw him all the time. They were always beating him and trying to kill him because he wouldn't bite anyone anymore. So then he went to Narada and said, "What am I supposed to do? You know, I'm trying to be humble, and they're just trying to kill me all the time." And Narada said, "Well, sometimes you have to go like this and put your hoods back, and then so that they don't overly give you trouble." So all these type of things have to be balanced with the practical. So we give in these kind of classes, we give general principles, and then it has to be balanced with the practical. Well, what happens if I'm envious, but is it always my fault? You know, it has to be practical things, and I have my limits and my capacities. Everything has to be balanced with the practical. But yet there are these principles are important. questions or comments? Yes.
Okay. When you were speaking of how sometimes your words may hit somebody else or their words may hit you, and that boy you said it was like 20 years later.
Yeah.
So what should one do if they feel they have hit, or if someone else is hit? And sometimes people say, oh, you've been
that you're hurt, which you're speaking from the point of
view. From the point of view of you being the upset person. And so, in person's mind, and you might bring it up with them, they might say, oh, you've been oversensitive, you know.
Well, say if you've hurt someone else, and then what should you do? That one's more obvious. What do you do? Like Indra. You put your helmet to their feet. But if you're hurt, what do you do? So it depends on, the basic principles. Tolerating, you think that I deserved it. There's one story that there was one of Prabhupada's godbrothers who used to visit him a lot. Well, Prabhupada was very ill near the end of his life, in the Kinsanadas Babaji. And when the Gaudiya Mathas were fighting, he used to go from one to the next, to the next, to the next. And they would all be fighting with each other. And when he'd get to, and plotting against each other sometimes. So he'd get to one and he'd just come from another one. And the devotees would naturally ask him, well, what are they doing there? You know, what's their plans? What's this going on and what's that going on? And he'd tell them. And then one day, one of the senior devotees, one of the mats, said, "You know, you come to our temple, and you just cause so much politics, and you just get everyone so upset, and everyone's mind is agitated, and you're just causing trouble, and this, and you're causing envy, and he looked at him and replied, "You finally understood me. Previously, when I would tell you how rotten I was, you thought I was being humble. But now you understand my nature." But he used to chant all the time. he was very qualified. But there are more ways to deal with it then, Prabhu, I want to get this off my chest and tell you how much I hate you. Tell you what a rotten person you are, because I want to be upfront with you. You know, you find someone who deals with these things. I think in Kali Yuga everyone is very sensitive, yes? Over little things we get disturbed because everyone is tending to be somewhat fragile inside. So when something happens like that, we can take shelter of Krishna's names. And you know, when we're hurt, we say, "Krishna, please protect me. Please protect me. Please protect me. Just see. Please, Krishna, protect me." Just showing us how dependent we are on Him. The material energy will continuously, in fact, show us how weak and insignificant we are. You know, I hear all these wonderful principles in the class, and yes, I will apply them, and it lasts about until the time Prasadam gets served, and then we forget everything. You know, forget there ever was a class or anything. And material energy will continuously humiliate us. Continuously and only. So these are the opportunities that Krishna, through the workings of the material energy, offers us to become humble and depend upon Him and pray in a very sincere way. And of course you can talk to someone too. Because often amongst the devotees, you know, there's so much pressure and tension to serve. And we have different opinions because we're individuals too, so it's not easy. And it's all volunteer, and everyone's got this, everyone's doing it as sincerely as they can, generally. And therefore it's not easy. So therefore we should, yeah, but, you know, Prabhupada instituted the saying Vansakalpa Trubhyascha every day for a specific reason, as we tend to offend each other in these close quarters and under the pressures of service. So to ask for forgiveness. So we can ask for forgiveness, you know, specifically to individuals or generally. Sometimes the devotees say, please forgive any offenses I have knowingly or unknowingly committed. Offer some prasadam to someone, you know, who you think you've really disturbed. Okay, thank you very much. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jaya, Srila Prabhupada ki jaya, Sri Sri Radha Balabha, Gaura Nityananda, Jagannath Baladeva, Subhadra Devi ki jaya, Gaura Bhaktivinoda ki jaya.